Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to everyone who's joining us here this week with Dr. T. We get together every Monday morning at 9 a.m., and we bring you amazing guests, great conversations that are both interesting and I think even inspiring. If you've missed some of those great discussions, you can find them by becoming a podcast member by going to drtenpenny.com, hovering over the podcast tab, and you will see that we've created a couple of new podcast offerings that we think will cover everybody's time and budget. So before I introduce to you today's special guest that I am so honored to have on this show, JP Sears, this morning, we're going to take a really quick break. We'll be right back.
Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant, you can take it when you're nursing, you can give it to little children, you can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water, because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out. The heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch within our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years. Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off.
Well, welcome back, everyone. JP Sears is a beacon of humor and insight. He blends comedy, authorship, and YouTube fame to champion freedom through satire. His work, which includes politics, fitness, and faith, invites audiences to challenge the status quo by fostering personal growth through genuine laughter. As a captivating speaker and content creator, JP has touched the lives of millions, guiding them to discover hope and through his quirks about daily life. His distinctive style not only entertains, but enlightens, making him a pivotal figure in the landscape of modern comedy. JP, welcome this week to our show with This Week with Dr. T.
Sherry, well, thank you. It's an honor to be here with you. And I know our paths have crossed in person at various conferences. And I've known of you and your work, and I've been a fan since 2001. So that's 23 years. So being able to sit down with you, and we're not in a frenetic, like backstage at a conference, and be here, it's an honor for me as well.
Well, thank you so much. How kind of you to say that. You know, I learned from your Wikipedia page, which I told you before we started recording, that, you know, finding out real information about you is really a challenging thing to do. So I learned from your Wikipedia page that you're a native Ohioan, that you were born in Toledo, raised in Bowling Green, and for a short time attended Bowling Green State University. So
yeah,
you know all about living in Ohio.
Yeah, I lived in Ohio for the first 23 years of my life before I moved out to San Diego to work with Paul Check. I know you're very familiar with him. You've worked with him, know of him. And yeah, I know all about Ohio. All my family is still there. Excuse me, this monkeypox. I got it from a pickleball orgy. And I'm back in Ohio usually a couple times a year visiting family. So I love Ohio. I think it's an underrated place, and it's great. And I don't live there anymore because there's better places, to be frank with you.
Well, I guess it's a better perspective. I love Ohio. I've been in all 50 states. I've been in like 60 countries. I can't imagine really living anywhere else than where I am right now, because I really love living in places that have four seasons.
Yeah.
And of course, that's what we have here. And you know, it's interesting that you went to Bowling Green. I went to University of Toledo, so we were kind of competitors, right? Things there for, you know, tongue in cheek, whatever that is.
Yes. Yeah. The football rivalry between Bowling Green and Toledo. I'd imagine you have more loyalty to Toledo than I do to Bowling Green at the university level, because You're an educated person who graduated. I went to Bowling Green State University for 3 months before I dropped out. I just knew, okay, this college track, it's not for me. I don't know what is for me, but I dropped out. And then luckily, just serendipities of life and maybe God's hand at play, I was then quickly led into Paul Cech's work that I started studying. First time I ever got passionate about learning anything in my life. But nonetheless, I was either so good or so bad at college, I was done with it within 3 months.
Well, now that you've mentioned Paul, it's interesting. I've known Paul since, I don't know, 2001, 2002. I actually went out and was a client at his center there for a short term. And then we've just stayed friends over the years. I mean, he's one of the most highly read individuals I think I've ever met in my life. He just reads voluminously and has also a very interesting career and life path. So, how did you get connected with him in the first place?
How I got connected, the one gym in Bowling Green that existed, there was a personal trainer there named Jackie Holman, and she had started studying some of Paul Cech's stuff. And when I was at the gym working out, her and I would chat. And she said, I know you're really into exercise, JP. You take it seriously. I think you might like this guy's work. So I said, well, okay, who is he? And so I ordered the at the time it was called Scientific Back Training, is on VHS tape. So just to date myself a little bit, and I was 18 years old when I ordered that, freshly dropped out of college, and it just lit a fire in me. His information, how in that training course he was using exercise to help get people out of sometimes lifelong back pain, it just fascinated me. Like, wow, you can like exercise to build up your body and be healthy and make an athlete better. That's cool. But like getting people out of pain, there's just more meaning to that. So it really lit a fire under me. And then I also think there's something, at least for me, when I'm learning new information, the messenger tends to be just as important as the message. So Paul Cech, he's a built guy, former army guy, just a hell of an athlete. And even to this day, I believe he just turned 64 years old. He's got the body of a 27-year-old. So just, and his personality is amazing. He's so charismatic. So that messenger presenting the message, that's really what got my attention. And then I started studying his stuff. And when I was 20, took my first in-person class with Paul, and we had a just instant great chemistry. And even though I was the youngest, most inexperienced one in the class, I showed most prepared, and that caught his attention. And he said, yeah, one day I'd love to have you working with me at my institute, training to teach courses. You need more experience, but go get it. And 3 years later, he called me up and said, hey, would you be willing to move from Ohio out to San Diego to work with me at the institute? And I said, I'm on my way. And then I was there with him for 10 years, and the man, both his educational information, but also just getting to spend time with him as a person. He probably more than anybody else changed my life, helped get me to believe in myself, see my gifts, and put me on a trajectory that I don't feel like I'm living the life of my dreams right now. I feel like I'm living the life beyond my dreams, what I ever dreamt. And I have so much gratitude for Paul Cech's influence.
When you worked at the Institute, were you mostly there in Encinitas, or did you travel around? Because I know he's got locations all over the world.
Yeah, I was, when I got there in September 2004, the Institute had just moved from Encinitas to Vista, California, so like 10 miles away. So Encinitas was great, right by the beach, and Vista, 10 miles inland, it's still a great place. But not as good, but they got more space, obviously, moving further from the beach. So I lived there, worked my daily practice out of the institute in Vista, California. And then within a couple of years, I was trained up to teach his holistic lifestyle coaching course. So for that, I would travel around, like do weekends anywhere from Sweden, Denmark, New York, Canada, just all Australia, just all over the place. But my feet were, client practice anyway, was rooted there in California.
How did you get such an early interest in health and fitness? What was
Being
what spiked you with that?
Insecure. I'll never forget when I was 11 years old, in the fifth grade, there was a kid in my class named Ben Fouts. Shout out Ben Fouts. And he wasn't even like trying to bully me or be mean. He just looked at me one day and said, "Oh, GP, your arms are really skinny." And like that was like a dagger in my heart. I think the meaning I assigned to that is like I'm weak and insignificant. So I very quickly after that, got my dad's old weight set from my grandparents' attic, brought that home, and I would spend hours a day, on some days hours in our basement just working out. Didn't have a clue what I was doing, but nonetheless, I was working out trying to mask my insecurities. And I had always been an athlete, so I liked the physicality of it, but also looking back, I can say, oh yeah, I was definitely trying to mask my insecurities by building up a facade and body of strength so I could convince myself and other people, hey, I'm strong and secure. Because what kid at 11 knows how to actually healthfully emotionally process their insecurities? So and I would use humor also to deal with my insecurities. And I'm grateful that that's the route I chose, because some people, they'll deal with their insecurities through misbehavior, getting in trouble, drugs, it can get fairly dark. So it was a relatively productive path. But nonetheless, that's what got me into fitness. It's certainly not in health. It's not what kept me in, but it's what got my initial synapses open to intentionally taking care of oneself.
Well, then how did you make the leap to go from that into comedy and become so worldwide known for your comedian skits and your satire and things like that? What was your journey along that path?
Yeah, it's not a predictable cut and dry journey. You don't like go to college, okay, I'll do fitness and health and then comedy. It's so yeah, the I like to say it's all been one happy accident, from my perspective. Ultimately, I think God has a plan for all of us. And if we're aware of it and have the courage to follow it, things typically work out better than we imagine. So, knowing I didn't have a plan, I can look back and say the whole time through my childhood, my sense of humor was, I would say, more alive than the average person's. I got pretty good at, as a kid, reading people and just understanding what I need to do to make them laugh. And then when I was teaching for Paul Check, I'd have a big audience that I'm supposed to lecture to for 3 days. And even with good information, if you're just sitting in a seat for 3 days hearing good information, it becomes a boring experience pretty quick. So I would find myself just naturally cracking jokes, with dry satirical humor as a way of engaging people, kind of snapping them out of their hypnotic trance that you just kind of go in after sitting still for 45 minutes. So that, without knowing it, that was giving me training on reading people and just in kind of in a way intuitively, probably logically as well, understanding what needs to be said to make someone laugh and taking subject matter at hand and building jokes off that. And then actually, we're coming up October 5th, 2014 was the first comedy video I published. So about the 10-year anniversary as we speak. So leading up to October 5th, 2014, I just kept having these ideas to share a perspective through the language of comedy on like a video, because I'd been living in California, you know, new age spirituality stuff all over the place. And I was in it. I got so much benefit from that world. But also there's a lot of shadow sides, a lot of egotistical nature in that world. So my comedy idea for a video was to call out the egotistical nature in this spiritual world. But I'm thinking, you know, I'm a younger guy for a health coach. So like acting serious and sincere all the time, that's what I should do. You know, it'd be bad for business to like release a comedy video and look goofy. But the idea kept coming to me. So I finally said, all right, I don't know how to make a comedy video, but I'm going to figure it out as I go. So I made that. It was called How to Be Ultra Spiritual. Release that in it. It went relatively viral at the time. And that woke me up to two things. One was a level of creative satisfaction I hadn't known before. It's one of those things, kind of like fulfillment from within. But also the fact that that video went viral, you know, I thought it'd be cool if it gets 10 views, but it's getting millions of views. So that codependently helped me see like, oh, my gift of humor, maybe it's for more than just me and my friends and family. And then I think probably 3 weeks later, I came up with another idea, made that video. And then I just started making videos sporadically, anywhere from once a week to once a month. And it was rewarding, and audience was slowly building. And after a little over 2 years of doing that, there was just opportunities to take if I kind of devoted myself fully to call it the craft of comedy. And but it was scary because like I had my client practice. I loved what I was doing, but I realized, okay, life is asking me if I have the courage to let go of something good to risk encountering something greater that has no certainty, has no guarantees. It could all fail and go away. But I chose to take that risk and pursue comedy. And I think this has become extremely relevant the past 4 years since the whole pandemic was launched. But my intention from the get-go wasn't, I'm here to make people laugh. It's, no, I'm here to hopefully get people to think deeper, think more for themselves, slice through the psychological scar tissue of their egotistical nature, and using the language of comedy to deliver messages that hopefully awaken people. And laughter is just a means to that end. So that was my intention from the get-go. And the past 4 years, in my opinion, we're living through the Great Awakening. So it's just a time where getting people, inviting people to think for themselves, consider new information, consider what might be propaganda taking up space in their mind that isn't their own thinking. That's just become more important, unfortunately, than I ever dreamed of. So, but yeah, that's a short story on what got me accidentally into comedy. Just following the little instinct of, yeah, I have an idea for a comedy video and I think it's a bad idea, but damn it, you know, I got to scratch the itch.
You know, you and I crossed paths at a conference that we were both speaking at in Alexandria, Minnesota, a few weeks ago. And your talk that you gave was so inspirational. And, you know, one of the things that you said was that everyone had told you not to talk about religion and politics. Yeah. Because it was bad, going to be bad for business. And it's been absolutely explosive to your business. Yeah. And I can see that, you know, especially in the last 4 years with doing satire about politics, there's so much fodder there, so yeah. Much material. That was another leap that you took that you said, I'm going to do it differently and do it my way. So you've done that.
Yeah, I feel like it was a choice, but it wasn't really a choice. back in the relatively early days of COVID. I think this was May 2020. I released a video called What It's Like to Believe Everything You See on TV, because I could see, like, all right, this whole pandemic, like, the TV's saying one thing, reality's playing out completely differently. These different figureheads, the Bill Gateses, the Faucis, the news anchors, they're brainwashing people. So I just, in my opinion, innocently portrayed that the way I would portray any topic I'm tackling with a comedy video. But that got divisive. Like, video got millions of views, but looking at some of the comments, like, some people are angry at me for, like, suggesting the TV doesn't know better than your brain and your heart. So there was just this outcry. You have to outsource your thinking to the TV and trust it blindly. And of course, there was a lot of support for the message, but the backlash was higher than other videos. And I realized in that moment with that video, oh yeah, freedom is now a political issue. And I had never cared about politics, but I care about freedom. And our freedoms were really being threatened by tempting people to voluntarily surrender their freedoms. And I saw where this could go, because you know a little bit about history and you know where these patterns of freedom erosion will go if people allow it. So I said, I don't like that freedom is now a political issue in the United States. Like, that's the one thing we shouldn't be politically divided on, but that's the United States of America. But it was. So I'm like, well, freedom's the most important thing to me. I've got a son coming into the world. I don't want to have to explain to him one day what freedom was. So yeah, I've got to just go all in on standing for what I stand for. And I did think it would be bad for business. Like, yeah, this is very political now. And if I have to lose a bunch of my audience, so be it. But I can't not stand for my principles here. And turned out it was one of the best things for business I've ever done, because now looking back, I can realize the freedom lovers, we've been on the side of the majority the whole time. But I didn't know that back in the early days of COVID. But I think it turns out that people were really hungry to have their voice and their perspective represented. And that wasn't happening very much back in 2020. Certainly nothing on mainstream media, just no representation of a freedom lover's voice. And then online, there were certainly people doing it, and some people doing it today that were scared to do it 4 years ago. So it just turned out, like, well, I'm one of the, call it, few that are just saying what they think about freedom and calling out the lies, hypocrisy, and corruption that's threatening it. So that definitely really started exponentially growing my audience, and also gave me just a renewed kind of, like, purpose 2.0, which I'm feels good. And I look forward to the day when freedom doesn't need to be so fiercely fought for. I think we should never take it for granted ever again. But right now, we're, in the words of RFK Jr., we're living on the hill to die on. And medical freedom being a part of that for sure. So, yeah, turned out it was fairly good for business.
Well, we're going to take a hold on to that thought for just a second, JP. We're going to take a really quick break. Today, we're talking to JP Sears, who doesn't need any introduction. And this has been very insightful. We've got more things to come. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We also have an apparel line on our store that has just the best things. In fact, I go and shop at my own store. I mean, I really do go and buy stuff out of my own store. They have t-shirts and sweatshirts and cups and mugs and totes. We've got a great designer. We're always adding new things all the time. And either one of those two product lines, either our private label supplements, our Opti line, the white bottles with the green leaves on it, or with the apparel store, and they're two separate stores. They do not have a single shopping cart. It's like you go in one store and get your groceries, and you go to the other store and get your shoes. Well, these are two separate stores, but you can use the same affiliate code. If you use the code podcast when you go to the checkout, you can get 10% off on everything you buy every time you go to the store.
Well, welcome back, everyone. JP, I love how you have made really understood about freedom being a political positioning, which shouldn't be. You know, I was talking to somebody about you the other day, and I was telling people how excited I was to have you on the show. And I was really looking forward to this discussion. And she said to me, you know, he's got a PhD in psychology, you know.
I like the way she thinks.
She said it's the only thing that really, he really understands all these things and can really see his audience. So she said, you know, she said, look it up. I'm pretty sure he's got a PhD in psychology. I thought you'd get a kick out of hearing that. And this is somebody that you would know if I repeated the voice, but you really do seem to understand the psychology of thinking and this whole thing about, the psychology of freedom. And it seems though it's getting worse. I mean, with things that just happened in North Carolina, and now we've got, you know, Iran lobbing bombs over at Israel, and they're talking about, you know, with this election that's coming up, you know, the difference of where our freedoms are going to reside if Trump wins or if Harris Waltz steal it, you know, where is that going to land? And they're talking about, again, stronger censorship and really penalizing. You know, I heard a little clip the other day from John Kerry.
Oh my gosh, that was horrible.
Horrible, that at the WEF thing where he said, you know, this freedom of speech stuff is really bad for democracy. Yeah. And then Bill Gates was parroting the same thing. Where do you think this is going from your vantage point and the millions of people you talk to and see? Where do you think that freedom of speech, censorship thing is going?
Well, I think what I know for certain is where different groups of people want to take it. I think Trump, Vance, RFK Jr., they want to take it right back to the Constitution. Like, we've had, like, the fact that there are fact checkers on TV and social media, there's censorship, there's politicians on TV, on the internet saying, yeah, we need to change the First Amendment. And if the Democrats win, we'll be able to change that to fight disinformation. So one side wants to take it in the direction of complete communism. The other side wants to take it back to the Constitution. And that's what I know for sure from my perspective. That's where they want to take it. And I certainly support the side that wants to take it to the Constitution, not obliterate the Constitution. But I think it's tempting to play the victim in this situation. And in a sense, I think there have been crimes against humanity. There have been constitutional violations from people who have become tyrannical in our government and even unelected people that are in positions of power. So in a sense, we are victims to that. But we're not just victims. And I think a victim mentality, if we're not careful, with the best of intentions, could take over and say, like, yeah, like, I hope they don't take it in, like, complete totalitarian direction. I hope they on the other side can save us from it. But I think ultimately stepping out of the temptation to be a victim, where it will go is exactly where we, the people, allow it to go. The people who are tyrannical, they have some power. They have tons of money. They control the mainstream media. They control big tech censorship. That's all been proven. Yet we, the people, hold the real power. You know, I've heard Mickey Willis suggest, you know, when it comes to, like, who are the people, like, the deep state, like, the people, like, orchestrating this? And he says, by his estimates, it's about 5,000 people, no more than 10,000 people. So let's take that with a grain of salt. But acknowledging those educated guesstimates for a second, even if it's 10,000 people trying to pull the strings into the erosion of freedom, just in America alone, we're a population of like 350 million people. So 350 million people, their will, the power that we have, is far superior to anything that can be done to us. So I even think it's dangerous, because it can kind of tempt us to be a victim, to use the term, they're taking away our freedoms. We look at COVID, well, they took away our freedoms. No, they didn't. You gave away your freedoms. Exactly. So short of physical enslavement, which, by the way, good luck to 10,000 people if they're trying to physically enslave 350 million people that want to be free. And even if it's just the one side, 150 million people, good luck physically enslaving them. The only way they can do it is to manipulate people into surrendering their power, surrendering their freedoms. And a lot of people have woken up the past 4 years and realized, yeah, freedom is the thing that makes life worth living. So I think it will end up exactly where we allow it. And I think we're, by my estimates, I think we've reached a critical mass where the allowing what we stand for, what we will permit, it's the momentum is going towards the Constitution, AKA freedom. I don't think there's enough people that are willing to comply their way into totalitarianism to take us all there. Now, I do think there will be major orchestrated attempts to get people to surrender their power. I mean, it took the manufacturing of COVID, both like a disease, but also the narrative about the disease. That was a big event. And it got a lot of people who would normally just be free, got them that, I'll stay in my house. I'll wear this mask. I won't do this. I won't do that. And I'll inject myself with that vaccine. It got a lot of people to do it. So I do think there will be other major orchestrated acute attempts to scare people into surrendering their freedoms. But we've all read the story, A Boy Who Cried Wolf. And when the same people are crying wolf again, I'm not going to fall for it. And there might come a day when there's an actual wolf. Yeah. I'd rather be eaten than comply my way into a tiny little coffin of comfort for protection. So a lot of people would say, the old saying, it's better to die on your feet than live on your knees. I'll risk dying on my feet, because living on my knees is no life whatsoever. So I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful about where this will go. But we, the people, have to keep reminding ourselves, we have the power. They don't. They're the Wizard of Oz. They're behind a curtain. They have a loud voice, but they're just 5 or 10,000 little people compared to 350 million people, let alone more of the world's population. That's the way I see it, Sherry. I'm not a psychic, but that's
well,
my
hope
perspective.
That you're right. You know, I did an interview a couple weeks ago with the producer of the new documentary. It's 2 hours. It's long. It's called The War on Truth. Mm. And it's about really boots on the ground. What happened at J6? Mm. You know, and it's a really amazing documentary of and one of the first questions I asked him, because I had watched the documentary in preparation for the interview, one of the first questions I asked was, where did you get that footage? Because it was stuff you'd never seen before. And he kind of chuckled and he said, well, I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you, you know, that sort of thing. And we talked about it, and they've had a showing at Congress. And I asked him how many people actually showed up. He said a handful. He said, but the people that were there were important, and they were really angry, because it's like, how come I had to watch a movie to get this information when people inside the government didn't? And at the end of that, I said to him, you know, what do you want to see happen with this film going forward? He said, we have to get the massive people, just like you were saying, that people have got to pull the scales off of their eyes and know that the power is within we, the people. That we collectively, and I've said for many years, you know, there's 450 of them in Congress, and there's 300 million of us. why do we let them pull our strings and do what they do? How do you think that we can mobilize people? I think that I just came back from a conference this weekend. I just got back this morning. And one of the people that was there, she was in that film, The War on Freedom, and her husband is still sitting in federal prison over the J6 sort of thing. And, she and I were spent a lot of time talking about it. And she said, you know, I think the problem is if you walked into this room in here behind us that has 600 people sitting in there, and you got on the stage and said, how many people in here think there's a problem going on? She said, you'd have everybody raise their hand. She said, and then if you ask the question, how many people have an idea of what we can do about it? She said, I don't think you'll have any hands. And, yeah. and we talked about it. And I said, I think that part of the problem is that there's so many different things going on that people yeah. feel like they're getting attacked from so many different directions. They're not sure which direction to go. And there's nobody really leading, saying, follow me. You are going to do issue number one, and you're going to do issue number two, and you're going to do issue number three, and try to rally the troops from a grassroots level. How yeah. do you think that we can do that?
Yeah, well, I definitely see the problem. And I think to some extent, the different issues that we get concerned about, I think to a degree, those are intentional diversions. You know, we can go in the direction of like, they're trying to indoctrinate children to think they're in the wrong gender, and men are in women's sports, tampons in boys' restrooms. Then like, don't get us started on the vaccine agenda and the election. I think that was stolen. What about this election? They're trying to assassinate President Trump. A lot of different directions, and all worthy of our attention, to be honest. Like, they're all important issues. I think we need to unite on the issue causing those issues. And if we can stay focused, and I'm not going to say this elegantly, but I would describe the main issue, I guess I'll describe it in two ways: an erosion of freedom and control. If we can stay focused, there's tyrannical people that are trying to erode our freedom and control us. We can see that as a commonality amongst any issue. It's like, okay, big pharma. Yeah, that's a leg of this one major issue of erode freedoms, control people. So I think we need to kind of like health, like, you know, if you've got a symptom somewhere, you might want to treat that symptom, but also look for the cause and treat the cause. Like, cool, you have back pain showing up in your back. It might be originating somewhere else. So I think we need to, cool, acknowledge symptoms, address based on our passions, but also keep our eyes at a causal level. And then there's also at an individual level, which, by the way, like uniting people on that, I think that's something that, like, in a way can be done at a distance as long as we're all united. There's also something big to be said about groups. That's one of the reasons why I love going to conferences where you and I go to. Those are groups of people, and magic happens in those groups. So one thing you can do is find gatherings and go to them. There's far more power in that than just the literal information you hear there, even though that can just be so worthwhile too. And then that's like kind of looking at it collectively. And then the individual level is, I think it's really important, and this is so simple, that people know what they stand for. You're aware of, you know, kind of what your heart says. You're aware of your own critical thinking. And then let your thoughts, let your words and actions stay in impeccable alignment with that. Makes you a principled person. Principled people, when we're doing that in our daily lives, and sometimes it's tough to do, but when we're doing that in our daily lives, we are living as the change we want to see in the world. We're not hoping for it. We're not hoping Trump gives it to us. We're not hoping, well, this group I'm a part of, hoping that gives it to us, but we're actually being it in our daily lives. you know, we all have conversations where it's where we're tempted to censor ourselves. Like, all right, that's the energy you're putting out in the world. Or you can stay principled, say what you think no matter what. Ideally, respectfully, not divisively. So I know that's a little bit abstract, easy to say, yet that's some of my perspective on what we can do. And lastly, I mentioned at the root causal level, Sherry, this is how my stupid mind works. You know, there's the root cause of groups of people trying to take freedoms and control other people. I think even the cause beyond that cause, I think we're in a time of spiritual warfare. I think they're trying to eliminate God from this world. I do think it's God versus Satan. And I don't think you can ever eliminate God, but you can eliminate people's perception and awareness of God. So if you look at the music, pornography, Hollywood, so much it's designed, whether it's designed this way, I think it is, but it certainly has the effect of disconnecting people from God. I think the more connected we are to God, that's the ultimate group to be a part of, because we're all connected to the same source. And if we're guided by God, not our own minds, not our own egos, certainly not the TV, we are very united, I think, in the best way possible. That's why communism bans religion right off the bat, because they know people who believe in God, they surrender to that higher power. We need them to surrender to us. So I think the biggest problem in our world is people are disconnected from God. And I think that's happened on purpose. And I think they are trying to do more of that, but we can just choose to do the opposite of that.
Wow. That's really good. That's really, really important. And I agree with you in terms of root cause. If people could just stay focused on how do I keep our freedom, regardless of how you define that. I mean, some people may define freedom as freedom of speech. Some may define freedom as maintaining the Second Amendment. Other people may want to congregate. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things of how you can define freedom, because freedom is a pretty broad brush word.
Sure.
And if we can stay as that is the root cause, how do we maintain our freedom to choose, our freedom to live, our freedom to worship, our freedom to eat what we want? You know, it's really important. Well, we've only got a few minutes left, JP. I could sit here and talk to you all day, but you've got things to do. And I'm just so honored to have you here this morning. Tell us about your America Made tour that's kind of coming to an end now. How did it go for this year? And are you planning to do another one?
Yeah, the America Made tour, that's my stand-up comedy shows. I go to cities all over. It's been great. You know, it's just such a joy to connect with people and share an evening of laughter and, you know, having hopefully deeper thinking happening beneath the laughter. But human connection is my favorite thing in the world. So being able to go to different cities and stand on stage, deliver jokes, my act, and give people relief at the same time. And by the way, a sense of community. Some of the cities I go to are what we might call, like, that's a very, you know, leftist, degenerated city. There's still so many freedom lovers there. So it just warms my heart when the, you know, people will tell me, yeah, coming to your show, it, thank you for the show, JP, but it felt so good being in a, you know, auditorium full of just other like-minded people, because I can feel so alone and so isolated. So it's just such a joy. And then, yeah, the American Made tour, it's sort of never ending. You know, it's coming to a close this year. I think I've got shows through middle of December, and then we'll pick back up in the next year. I don't know, maybe we'll call it by a new name, but yeah, it's touring, doing comedy is just something I do.
Well, that's just great. Well, tell us how that we can find you, follow you, get tickets to your show, if, you know, if there's tickets left for the remaining ones that you have this year. Yeah. And where's the best way that we can get more of you?
Yeah, well, the single best place is my website, awakenwithjp.com. And because I don't like to outsource my connection with other people to big tech, you know, and my ability to stay undeplatformed, or tomorrow it could happen. I would invite people on my website. You can sign up for my newsletter list. That's the only way I have ensured that you and I get to stay connected. And on my website, it's got links to all my, you know, YouTube, Rumble, and all the social medias, big tech and rebellious tech like Rumble. So you can find my stuff there, and my tour schedule is on the website as well, awakenwithjp.com.
That's wonderful. Well, JP, thank you so much for staying, for being here with us this morning. This is just, you know, seriously, I love talking to you. I could just sit here and just talk all day. So I just thank you so much for the generosity of your time. And I want to say to all my listeners, you know, it is Monday. So tonight is our Tenpenny Files on Your Health is Monday night. Tomorrow morning is This Week with Dr. T, where we do open forum question and answers. Tuesday night is Happy Hour with Dr. T, where we invite Christian businessmen and women talking about their books, and a lot of pastors. Then we do Thursday nights. We're doing a whole series of different things on Thursday nights. And now our Thursday night Bible study is also on Friday night on hisglory.me, which you can find that at 7 p.m. on hisglory.me. It's a four-part series, taking a deep dive into various aspects on spiritual types of things. So with that, I want to close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible. I close all my podcasts with, whether they are live or pre-recorded, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So the next time, until we see you next week, same place, same time, JP, I want to thank you again so much for being here this morning. Honestly, this has just been a delight. And to everyone else, I want to thank you for coming, for joining us. We'll see you here next week, same place, same time. Goodbye, everybody, and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body's vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com, and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.